Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Start this evening. Sometimes it takes just a few minutes to change over all the file names and everything to get the recordings just right. That was the case here. What a fascinating takedown, among other things, of Fat Tony Scalia, Dr. Bill just did. Right there at the end of the program, you know, another axe handle moment. Nothing like it. There's really, really nothing like Dr. Bill anywhere on the radio box at all. God knows, not terrestrially. And nothing that I've found really on the interweb tubes either, for that matter. So, anyway, I was a little bit slow getting, I had to change the file names and stuff like that. But hey, look, it's Monday. It is the end of September and we're here. And we are here thanks entirely to you and the way you responded over the past week in helping us to get here in one piece and helping the horn to see October, and because this is the last day of September, I know that, and helping us move toward our anniversary on October the 24th. Wow. It's Monday. And that means it is, in particular, oh yeah, it's Moran Monday on the horn, absolutely. And God, I didn't know if we'd make it to today. I mean, I'm not talking about the crisis of last week. I'm talking about the 700 million car pileup of Morans running onto the headed for the Moran Monday on ramp. My God. But it is, hurry, 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 step right up, it's Moran Monday on the horn. We have Morans of all stripes, religious Morans, right-wing Morans, bircher Morans, bagger Morans, booger-eating Morans, repig-licking Morans. Holy mackerel, for less than 5 cents, you can peer behind this thin cybernetic veil of cybernetic canvas and witness Moranity of proportions you're scarcely able to imagine. You can't tell the Morans without a program, and this is the program that tells the Morans. You just can't tell them much. Folks are advised to hang on to their bags, wallets, purses, things like that as they enter the Moran Monday tent. The Morans can, especially the religious ones, get a little grabby. Head for the hills. You'll be up to your armpits and Morans. Oh, I'm not kidding. This is... Marty's got it right. Yeah, so many Morans, it was like the Lay's potato chips. You couldn't pick just one. And it's the absolute truth. Oh, God. Where to begin? Well, I started the competition over the weekend with a post to Twitter and Facebook. We'd kind of retired Bill O'Reilly for a while. I mean, he is a past master. He's a Moran emeritus. But God, he's come out. You gotta lift the ban for something like this, for the hubris involved in something like this. Bill O'Reilly, the man that the Savage Wiener, no, really, Michael Savage, refers to as the Leprechaun. Man, it's tough when even your own right-wing freak compadres hate your damn guts. Has a murder fixation. First, it was JFK's assassination that he scribbled about with his purple crayon tucked tightly between his toes on the soft, soft wall of the little room where he lives when they carry him off the set, screaming, "Darn thing sucks! We'll do it live!" And of course, he made a complete mishmash of the assassination of John Fitzgerald Kennedy. But he did so profitably, and that is, of course, the real measure in right-wing world. Well, can we make a buck at it? Uh-huh. All right, well, I'm going to say that JFK was lasered by the Martians. Liberal, communist, progressive, pinko, commie, Martians. Did I say commie twice? Good, I meant to. So there was that. Then he took what can only charitably be described as an ahistorical look at the assassination of Abraham Lincoln. I think he declared in the end of that book that Lincoln was done in by the toddler who would later become V.I. Lenin. Not sure. But even that was not enough. No. No, with the bit in his tired old ground down teeth, Bill O'Reilly took off running. It is apparently on bookshelves now, and oddly enough, they're not catching fire spontaneously. First it was killing JFK. Then it was killing Lincoln. Anybody that hasn't seen the Facebook page or know what I'm talking about, want to guess what's next? How about killing McKinley? He's boring. Might have to say something decent about Teddy Roosevelt. Okay, so... killing Garfield? No. Killing Gandhi? No. Little fellow just... No, it won't work. Killing RFK. I mean, he's been down the Kennedy path before, so why not? Nope. And can you just see? This could become an entire Time Life. Well, it would be Fox Now. New from the Fox News Library: Killing Martin Luther King by Bill O'Reilly. Well, let me just say first, I wish I'd done it instead of that James Earl Ray. No. I'm vamping. Because I can't hardly stand to even let these words out of my mouth. They hurt so much. Bill O'Reilly's new book, nominated here on this here Moran Monday, and you'll understand the minute I say it why, I mean, yeah, we had to lift the ban. The hubris involved with this, the stupidity, the outright lack of any understanding of the subject matter at all. Yeah. Bill O'Reilly's new book is titled Killing Jesus, A History. The horror. But it really is. And this thing will fly off bookshelves like hotcakes. It will be bought en masse by right-wing organizations. And here in about 3 weeks, it will be on all the shelves of your Dollar Tree, Dollar General, Family Dollar for a buck. And even then, I won't buy it. Is it already on the New York Times bestseller list? Does it have that little dagger next to it? No, that doesn't mean it's just another book by Bill O'Reilly about somebody getting killed. The dagger means that it was bought by the tractor trailer load to give out as premiums. You know, send $10 to Wingnut Daily right now and we'll send you Bill O'Reilly's new book, Killing Jeebus. A history. They have to add that A history part on there just to convince the mouth-breathing, knuckle-walking freaks who follow, yeah. No, this here's a history of how Jesus was killed. Bill O'Reilly done told me because it's a history. It's got what plants crave. The guy who ghost wrote this for O'Reilly is called his writing partner. I don't know why they can't just opt for, you know, the old standby. Long-time companion! But they didn't. So O'Reilly takes a run at the execution of Jesus Christ by the Roman state. Actually, his name wasn't Christ, we all know that. Yeshua Bar Yusuf. And manages to entirely screw up the entirety of the history of Palestine at the turn of the Common Era. One review of the book says, without a method, Killing Jesus has all the critical rigor of your local church's nativity play. But here's his thesis, and this is why it winds up being a More in Monday lead nominee. Dare I suggest you might want to get out the get out the duct tape and the tennis ball. In leading into these mad scribblings, O'Reilly says, and this is a quote, he wants to separate fact from myth. It's going to be a little hard to do insofar as there is not a lot of factual information with which to work. Insofar as the Gospels themselves are hagiographic and not biographic, and certainly were not conceived as works of history. They are works of argument and works of apology and works of advocacy. But you knew that if Bill O'Reilly's talking about it, somewhere along the way, Jesus is going to turn into a Republican. Maybe it's when John the Baptist douses him with a little water from the River Jordan. But sooner or later, he's going to turn into a supply-sider, supporting wars and things. And he does. O'Reilly, Moran, makes the argument in this book, this is where the duct tape and the tennis ball come into play, he argues that Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian, semi-literate, itinerant rabbi day laborer, was crucified. Oh, really? I'm not kidding. Sit down. Just put the tennis ball in a little strip. Because you're going to be screaming. Yeshua was crucified
because he wanted lower taxes. Really. I should know better than to mess with the goddess of irony. There I was giggling away on Friday on the front porch talking about telling the story of how Raphael or Michelangelo discovered the lost gold of the pharaohs, transferred it to Spain. It was sent on a boat to the New World on Columbus's second cruise, and then they money laundered it and sent it back to Spain where it was used to... Oh, my God, I'm so ashamed. That or I'm in the wrong racket. Because I hadn't heard anything about this when I was doing that stuff on Thursday night and when I talked about it on Friday. But no, really... O'Reilly argues that there was a series of kickbacks from temple taxes to the Roman occupiers via the priestly class of the temple, and that when Jesus overturned the money changers' tables in the temple, that this so angered the tax and spend liberal Romans that they had to have him killed. Which kind of ignores that whole passage in the Gospels where Pilate says, "I find no fault with this man." He claims, in addition, this is a quote, "When that moment arrives, Rome will..." talking about why the Jews were looking for the Messiah, the return of the Messiah, or the coming of the Messiah, not the return. Boy, if I got that one wrong. Talking about why the Jews looked for the coming of the Messiah, and describes it as, "When that moment arrives, Rome will be defeated and their lives will be free of taxation and want." Oh, Margaret. Get a net. I was stunned. It is interesting about all of the Jesus stuff that gets left out. All that social welfare gospel that is pretty easy to find. It didn't make the cut for O'Reilly. Holy cow! So we have that. And you can understand why. I mean, and now you do, I'm sure, understand why we had to pull him lift the lifetime ban. Jack in Shreveport noting, "Bob, I haven't taken data, but I think that the publishing rate of conservative books increases when we get toward elections." Jesus says, "Vote for..." Oh my. So that, and ever so much more. What else? What else? Oh, you've got a lot of nerve. This is a moment of sort of general teabagger, knuckles dragging on the ground moranity that's downright scientific. It's kind of interesting. The people at CNBC commissioned a poll, and they did it in a pretty scientific manner. They wanted to find out what effect language has on how people form their opinions and express their biases. So CNBC commissioned a poll regarding the upcoming, and it is, I mean, and this, I mean, truly, has there ever been a bigger political bête noire than the Affordable Care Act is for the right wing? Well, the name of the Affordable Care Act, the full name is the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act. Somewhere back long about the beginning of the seemingly interminable presidential election of 2008, which began actually in like March 2007, or maybe February. I remember we were busy bidding farewell to my father at the time, and I sat staring slack-jawed at a television screen when Barack Obama, candidate Senator Barack Obama, and then Senator Hillary Clinton each addressed the congregation at the Baptist Church in Selma. But during that primary process, each candidate released their vision of what health care reform would look like. Senator Clinton's was immediately referred to as Hillary Care, just as it had been referred to in the early 1990s. I mean, you stick with what works. And, of course, because the candidate Obama plan was referred to as Obamacare. Some stunning numbers came out of the polling that CNBC did. There were 812 respondents. The pollsters divided that number by two, 406 and 406. 406 poll respondents were asked whether they support Obamacare. 406 were asked whether they support the Affordable Care Act. One thing to bear in mind when you hear these prattling peacocks of the Republican right, one thing to bear in mind is that 30% of the American people, damn near one-third of the body politic of this once great nation, ain't got no clue what the Affordable Care Act even is. Interestingly, that number drops to 12% when people are asked what is Obamacare. Somebody's been winning the messaging wars, haven't they? The data breaks out even further as follows. 29% of the public support Obamacare, according to CNBC. 22% support the Affordable Care Act. Here's where it gets interesting. 46% oppose Obamacare. Only 37% oppose the Affordable Care Act. It's like Coke versus Pepsi, only they've both been replaced with Pepsi. By a wide margin, men, white men, independents, and Republicans generally, have a much more virulent response to the idea of Obamacare than they do to the Affordable Care Act. If you say Obamacare to young people, Democrats, non-white folks, and women, they have a positive response to the word. So this, you know, this tells us something about teabaggers, wingnuts, morans, birchers, booger eaters, that like. There was no attempt in the study to explain why it is that white, independent, or Republican men had such an incredibly hostile response to the idea of Obamacare. But is that a question we really need to ask anymore after the first term, and now we're a year into the second term? Do we need to ask that anymore? So to recap, wingnuts, when asked about the Affordable Care Act, say, well, it might be a good idea. I kind of like it. But when a similar wingnut is asked about Obamacare, it's going to turn us into a bunch of Kenyan fascist Muslim Islamo anti-colonialists, and they're going to build the FEMA camps, and they're going to tell you that that's where you got to go if you want to go to get your doctor and done and get your rheumatism medicine. But then they're just going to lock the doors of the FEMA re-education Obama camp behind you, and the next thing you know, you're selling cigarettes over there under the guard tire. Yeah. Steve writing in. Why do I feel like, in addition to living in an armed madhouse, that we also live in a huge preschool? I think that's rather unfair to the preschoolers, Steve. They have the ability to learn. Baggers, birchers, and booger eaters, generally Republicans, do not. I love headlines like this. Breaking by the New York Times. Obama criticizes House Republicans. This is what the New York Times says qualifies as criticizing House Republicans. The idea of putting the American people's hard-earned progress at risk is the height of irresponsibility and doesn't have to happen. Let me repeat that. It does not have to happen. All of this is entirely preventable. God, Barack, tell us how you really feel. Don't hold back. One faction of one party in one House of Congress, in one branch of government, doesn't get to shut down the entire government. You don't get to extract a ransom for doing your job. Sure told them. But then again, maybe they'll probably have, the right wing will most assuredly have a hissy over that. I'm sure the hissy's already in progress. Because they had a hissy when Harry Reid, not exactly known for his stirring, fiery rhetoric from his position as majority leader of the Senate of the United States, simply referred to the term banana republics. Really? How dare he? No, banana republic is what that banana eating president of ours has got done to America. It's Kenyan. Banana republics. So we're going to have ourselves a little old government shutdown, looks like. And see, this is kind of a perfect storm. Because the way it has potential to play out is quite interesting, really. They will shut the government down as of tomorrow morning. And the Wall Street boys, who have placed all of their eggs in the Republican basket in many instances, know exactly, and the markets were just tanking. Are they still tanked? Anybody want to help? Yeah. The money boys aren't going to like this, one assumes. But far more so, I was out earlier today. I turned on the radio. I should have known better. It's not like there's anything progressive. There's a great little progressive radio station down in Huntington, West Virginia, but I couldn't get its signal if I climbed a mountain and stood from the top of the tallest tree and held up an old coat hanger for an antenna. Just couldn't. So I just turned on the statewide talk line, which is actually like the statewide wingnut coconut telegraph. Wingnut telegraph. And heard people sending in their notes about the one thing they would say to the government if the government would listen. And I heard one screed from one fellow who, I don't know, toe typing, is that how they get these things out into the moronosphere? Said, if we have a shutdown, all non-essential personnel will not come to work. Well, if they're non-essential, why do we have them? Why don't we just fire them? That's what we need to do. Don't they realize we's in debt? Need to fire the non-essential people because they're non-essential. It means they ain't necessary. Just fire the lot of them. That is the wisdom that emanates from the hills and hollers of almost level West by God, Virginia, on the for-profit terrestrial radio stations. You get the idea. One can only assume that some of the non-essential people that our Bircher, Bagger, Booger Eater, Wingnut friend was talking about, who am I kidding, they weren't our friends, would be hungry people. Now, with the shutdown in place, Social Security checks and a number of other social safety net programs are going to continue. The same is not true, however, of the special supplemental nutrition program for women, infants, and children. It is commonly referred to as WIC. If the Repiglicans shut down the government, then the women and infant children served by WIC don't get served. And that's not, that is, contrary to the beliefs of the wingnuts, birthers, baggers, and booger eaters out there, that is not just a handful of women of color driving Cadillacs somewhere in the wilds of Georgia. It is 9 million at-risk mothers, infants, and children. The Repiglican Party today said F you to 9 million mothers and children who will go hungry without it. There may be the United States Department of Agriculture prepared a memo on what would happen if there was a government shutdown by the birther, booger-eater, bagger contingent of the right-wing pig-licking party in Washington, D.C. Sort of like a description of what could expect one could expect to happen in the event of a profound national disaster. The USDA said that state budgets, because these are monies that are handed down from the federal government to the states. And the USDA said, hey, you know, some of the states might be able to continue WIC payments for maybe a week. Maybe. Tops. But after that, and this is a quote from the memo, no additional federal funds would be available. The memo continues, states can probably shelter families receiving WIC from the effects of a shutdown for a short period, but it could be a real problem if it lasts more than a few days. Over at the Center for American Progress, they had a campaign called Half in Ten. It was related to poverty issues. Nancy from Williamsport, Maryland, was hospitalized after her first child was born. She said, WIC provided us with formula that we would never have been able to afford. Without the formula and groceries that WIC helped us with over these years, we would be further in debt. Then there was Amanda in Forest Park, Illinois, who had to quit one of her jobs because she got sick while she was pregnant. Because remember, Republicans want them babies born, but after they's born, babies, you's on your own. Amanda and her husband both lost their health insurance. That's uniquely American. It's uniquely American. But because of WIC, Amanda was able to keep her own nutrition at a decent base level while she was pregnant. But then she also, through WIC, got an opportunity to get a position as a breastfeeding care counselor in underserved communities in and around Chicago.
That's that Chicago politics, you see. That's what that Kenyon.
Right. So there's a lot of rolling downhill. And I guess it's rolling now. Is there any reason to expect that this looming disaster is going to be averted? To borrow a bit from an analogy Jim just sent in via email, is there any reason to expect that the Republicans are going to put down their fiddles and try to put out some fires as the new Rome burns? I think there's a bit of envy involved among the birthers and the baggers and the booger eaters. Historically, they look back and they see that footage of you know, and they hear that phrase, burn, baby, burn. And by God, they want to see how much fun that is. And here we are. Bunch of juvenile delinquents with a box of strike anywhere matches, lighting them off their zippers and throwing them at puddles of gasoline. It's about the size of it, isn't it? Feels that way to me. But we got lots of more ants. When things like this come along, crises, and this is a crisis. And like I said, it's the perfect storm, because if they can get the government shut down, then it's only, what, a week or so until the debt ceiling has to be dealt with? So we'll shut the government down and default on our pre-existing debt. Oh, may you live in interesting times. And then, of course, there's another person who has been retired from Moran Monday who had to be dragged out today. On her way out of the Congress, representing Michelle Bachmann, who even got schooled by none other than Wolf Blitzer the other day, for saying that Obamacare was going to kill Granny. I mean, these death panels, if these death panels come along, it's going to be terrible for all of us. Well, she always answers the phone when Wingnut Daily comes a-calling. Yes, Lord, yes. And she had a straight-up explanation for why that is.
I think the reason is because President Obama can't wait to get Americans addicted to the crack cocaine of dependency on more government health care. Because once they enroll millions of more individual Americans, it will be virtually impossible for us to pull these benefits back from people. All they want to do is buy love from people by giving them massive government subsidies. If it means delaying it rather than repealing it, I'm for it. We have to do what we can do. They're trying to fly a plane they haven't even built yet.
And they're doing it on crack, apparently. You got that? The President of the United States is a crack cocaine dealer. She wants to call him... In her most Christian heart of hearts, she wants to haul out that word and just have N-word Tourette's for about, 50 hours. She wishes she was a senator so she could filibuster and say nothing but that word. It'd make her feel so good. The vat of crazy is a boiling. Larry Klayman has announced the date of his beer hall putsch, in which President Obama will be overthrown. He wants to overthrow the President of the United States because he has an anti-Christian, anti-Semitic, anti-white, socialist Islamic agenda. So he wants people to gather in Washington, D.C. on November 19th in what he describes as Gandhi and Martin Luther King style. Really? To save the Republic. He wrote as follows. The events of this week, combined with the last 5 years of Obama's so-called phony scandals and other outrages designed to subvert the rule of law and our freedoms as a whole, all in pursuit of his anti-Christian, anti-Semitic, anti-white, socialist, Islamic agenda, are another reminder why the Muslim-in-chief must be removed from office without further delay. I can no longer tolerate, I can no longer stand... Obama infiltration, Obama insurgency, and Obama's theft of our precious bodily fluids. Now, that part's not in there, but it really does fit, doesn't it? Obama and his minions are destroying the country and exposing us to unacceptable future annihilation at the hands of his Muslim brothers. To keep us down while he works his evil plan, he's using our own NSA in full spying mode against us. The time has come to mass in Washington, D.C. on November 19th and to engage in peaceful civil disobedience, Gandhi and Martin Luther King style, to finally force Obama to resign the presidency and leave office immediately, or else face the music for his recent conviction for election fraud and other crimes. You might be interested to know that there was no such thing. Larry Klayman convened a bunch of... right-wing birther bagger booger eater types at a local Denny's somewhere in Georgia and declared it to be dum-dum, the people's court, and they indicted and charged and convicted Barack Hussein Obama for being a Kenyan Muslim socialist with deep-seated hatred of white people and anti-colonialist tendencies. The time has come to mass in Washington, D.C. on November 19th and to engage in peaceful civil disobedience. This week, with the failure of Senator Ted Cruz's efforts to block funding for Obamacare in the Senate and the expected cave-in by Speaker John Boehner, it is clear that we have no representative form of government. As in 1776, the people must now take action to rid the nation of this new, far more evil tyrant who makes King George III look like a Boy Scout. Join me in Washington, D.C., November 19th, and let's demand an end to this president's reign before all is lost and our nation drowns in a sea of corruption and subversion of the freedoms our founding fathers fought and died for, which freedoms they bequeathed to us to protect and preserve for future generations. This is your duty if you're an American patriot. Wolverines. Okay, I added the Wolverines part, but you knew I would, right? But like I said, these right-wingers have an urge, a real urge, to just see it all come down, because they're going to build the perfect corporatist, Milton Friedman-esque, Ayn Randian, Somalia with cable wonderland out of the ashes and the rubble. That takes us to Mark Levin. Not Mark Levine. Mark Levin. A seedy looking sort of beady eyed, deep set dark circles guy who apparently never gets out of his basement. Mark Levin has offered some advice. Okay, got to answer this. Be right, stand by. Steve writing, with regard to Larry Klayman, is that real? That's not from John Stewart. No, Steve, this is real. This was real. That's what they're out there saying. And then, of course, yeah, this is really Mark Levin. A man, by the way, whom we have previously identified, and it's worth re-identifying as a man with a voice made for print. Thanks to Media Matters for this. Someday.
First of all, before I get to Golden Line, all the reporting now is, what is this threat of a shutdown going to do to the stock market? Oh, my God, the stock market. Not once have I seen a news report on the debt in this nation. We're talking about, in addition to the continuing resolution, and the reason we need a, quote-unquote, a continuing resolution is because Harry Reid has blocked every damn budget that's been passed by the House of Representatives. But this debt ceiling. There's no talk about the debt. It's all, hey, what's the effect on the stock market? Screw the stock market. Goes up, it goes down.
Okay, I have to interrupt for a moment. For those of you who recall great advertising, does this guy remind you of anybody? Because he does me. And I know I you'll recognize it immediately. Let's, yeah, here we go.
I can't believe they went with the frogs.
Louis.
Our audition was flawless.
Louis.
We did the look. Huh? We did the tongue thing.
Mm-hmm.
That was great.
Louis, frogs sell beer. That's it, man. Number one rule of marketing.
The Budweiser lizards. We could have been huge.
Hey, there'll be other auditions.
Oh, yeah, for what? This was Budweiser, buddy.
No.
This was big. Those frogs are going to pay.
Let it go, Louis. Let it go.
You stink!
You hear him?
Get off the stage!
It's Mark Levin!
Your mother's an iguana!
Hey, my mother's half iguana.
I'm sorry. I meant no disrespect.
What the?
Whoa! I'm no electrician, but that has got to be dangerous.
Oh, my. Bud? Whoa. Louie.
Frankie, eventually every frog has to croak.
That's not funny.
I laugh when I'm sad.
Yeah, I laugh when I'm sad. Really? That's Mark Levin. I mean, just listen to the voice.
This isn't about Wall Street. This isn't about corporate America.
That is not French!
This is about saving the Republic. What's left of it. I'm serious. Is there a proposal on the table somewhere today to try and control spending? Obama, I'm not negotiating. Oh, you're going to hold a gun to my head. Hey, they're extorting me. It's blackmail. I'm not negotiating. The hell is this?
Another professional broadcaster who can't afford a cough switch. Did you hear the little... He is. I'm convinced of it now. He's Louie from the Budweiser Lizard ads. Oh, Louie, you're begging for a pink slip. Is anybody talking about the debt? Well, not the way you want to talk about it, since the deficit's coming down and everything, but yeah. Jack and Shreveport. Bob, yep, you're right. Mark Levin, conservative bad guy. Sergi, writing in. Bob, let us never forget the term dog whistle politics. She can't come right, by she. Sergi means 1L Michelle Bachman. She can't come right out and say, hey, the N-word. So instead, she invokes a stereotype of black people dating back to the 1980s. Why is that like a dog whistle? Well, the casual viewer-listener won't catch the racist term, but the wackadoodle dandy base, a.k.a. the lowest common denominator, sure will. Just like dogs, but not humans, can hear a dog whistle. Signed, from Fort Worth. Sergi, fried chicken and watermelon. Kyle. Ay. It's true. It's absolutely true. The right wing is now represented by Louis the Budweiser Lizard. What a delight. What an except for the fact of, well, you know, how damn dangerous they are. But that's the kind of Moran Monday we're up against right now. Our buddy Horst says, I'm waiting for Boner to grab his cowboy hat, hop on the nuke, and open the bomber bay doors. Yeehaw! To which Sandra replied via Twitter, for real though, this shit's bonkers, and I'm glad I'm out west. Horst says, I'm about as far away as physically possible from the United States, but I fear the ripple effect. And remember, that is very much a reality. Because if we default, well, it's already been stated that the impact on the global economy will be significant. By the way, Marty wants to nominate the University of California system for, or no, the University of California at Berkeley for Moran Monday. Headline from the Daily Californian. UC to implement final offer on service worker wages pension plan. After drawn-out negotiation processes concluded unresolved, the University of California announced Tuesday this past that it will implement its last offer on wages and a revised pension plan to more than 8,000 service workers employed by the system. The move comes after a string of failures in the negotiation process between the university and the Workers' Labor Union, American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, 3299. The university and the union entered negotiations in October. The union's service workers, which include custodians, food service people, gardeners employed by the university, have worked without a contract since February. Having exhausted the option of bargaining, the university is legally allowed to move forward with this plan. So, service workers from Ask Me 3299 are going to be subjected to a two-tiered pension plan. Now, instead of 5% of pay going toward the pension, they have to contribute 6.5%. Those hired on or after July the 1st must give 7%. The university is going to bump its contribution from 10% to 12%. And, of course, the beauty of pension plans is that they can always be raided. Nice. See, this is the demise of any idea that government or business should be compelled to even remotely give a good goddamn about anything but power and profits. Congratulations. Here's the logical end of that kind of thinking. It is necessarily and naturally a story coming from Texas. Corpus Christi, Texas, to be precise. It's the story of Rodney Duve. He owns Duve's Quick Stop. I don't see an accent grave over the E or anything, so I'm just going to say that it's Duve's. Maybe it's Dove's. I don't know. It's Rodney's last name. Rodney, it turns out, wasn't screwed down real tight. One of his neighbors said, on occasion, when I came into the store, I saw him in a rage, a scary rage. I don't think it's a reason. Well, so what did Duve do? A kid was apparently, or some individual, was going to steal two cases of beer from him this past Saturday night. 51-year-old Rodney Duve was behind the counter. KRIS-TV, oh really, Christ, described the person with the unpaid-for beer as a known gang member, was walking out of the store with some unpaid-for beer. That's when Rodney Duve opened fire. Rodney Duve, of course, being a lawful gun owner. Note the parentheses in front of and behind the letter L. Lawful gun owner. So for the price of two cases of beer, apparently, Rodney Duve blew away a 39-year-old human being. The report I'm looking at says he was shot multiple times, including at least one blast to the head. One of his neighbors, probably another one of those people who had seen him being in a scary rage, said he didn't have to shoot the person for two cases of beer. A life doesn't equal two cases of beer. I don't think it's a reason to take someone's life for two cases of beer when the person was almost outside. Meanwhile, a right-winger by the name of Stephen Kersey said, Texas is supposed to be the land of lax gun laws, but the police have been quick to throw all the blame at a man who was simply trying to protect his business. Don't want to get shot? Don't be a thief. It's that simple. Be a useful part of society and you won't have to be worried. So if he's going out the door, presumably his back is turned to Rodney Duve when Rodney Duve begins, "Shoot him in the back, Gomez! Shoot him in the back!" Including one blast to the head. He's in the county jail, Rodney Duve is, being held on, and please, please, you didn't put the tennis ball away, did you? I hope not. He's being held in the county jail, oh God, on $35,000 bail. That's what they set your bail out. That's what they set your bail at when you shoot a known gang member misdemeanorly taking off with two cases of your beer. Now, I know that Texas is the only state in the union where you can use deadly force in defense of property, but really? Two cases of beer? He's been charged with something. It doesn't appear to be murder. Because you got to think that murder would get you, A, no bail, and B, if any bail was granted, something higher than $35,000. But the life of a known gang member is, and you know, that's more of that dog whistle code Sergi was talking about, don't you know? The life of a known gang member is not even worth $50,000 bail money. He was simply trying to protect his business. The only thing was, the guy was leaving. The business was under no threat. Shoot him if you got him, right? Yeah. Oh, Lord, it goes on and on and on. Randy in PA noting, the media and Wall Street are cleaning up on this, all this talk of the shutdown. Unlike the common investor, Wall Street has all sorts of ways to make money on a down market as well as an up market. The 24/7 lamestream media can portray this as a cliffhanger. I don't know why anybody would portray this as a cliffhanger. I expect vandals to do what vandals damned well do. They have set out all along to destroy the government of the United States, and they are succeeding. So there's that. I don't know, Randy. Do you think you can take a whole evening of right-wing bashing? It's not bashing. It's just truth-telling, as far as I can tell. Rodney Duve. Yeah, the right-wingers are real, real unhappy. You want to... I mentioned what Harry Reid said. You want to hear him? You want to hear him really giving the right-wing hell? Yeah.
The House has had our bill since Friday. They've still got it. Their amendments, their vexatious amendments, are gone. They're no longer part of what we're doing here. As we said Friday, nothing's changed. They try to send us something back, they're spinning their wheels. We are not going to change Obamacare. They want any changes in Obamacare, wait till after the debt ceiling. Wait until they're willing to sit down and do a budget for us, with us, and approach this in a reasonable manner. I have a very simple message to John Boehner. Let the House vote. Stop trying to force a government shutdown. Let the House work its will, all 435 members. not just the majority. If they brought this bill to the floor with a rule that said everybody can vote on it, it would pass by a large margin. It would prevent a government shutdown. If John Boehner blocks this, he will be forcing a government shutdown, and it will be a Republican government shutdown. That's pure and simple. Many House Republicans have admitted openly that this is a fool's errand. Dent from Pennsylvania said it's a fool's errand. He said yesterday, let's vote tomorrow. I'll vote for it to keep the government open. And other House members have said the same thing. The votes are there to pass a clean CR. Here's what Dent said specifically. I'm prepared to vote for a clean resolution tomorrow. It's time to govern. I don't intend to support a fool's errand. That's a direct quote. Democrats have already met Republicans in the middle on spending. We're not going to be negotiating with ourselves, and that's what it amounts to. I've heard the idea of a short-term extension floated. Let me be very, very clear. The Senate's bill is a short-term extension. That's what it is. This is a six-week funding bill. That's all it is, 6 weeks. We can't pass this. We're only truly entering a banana Republican mindset. This is what we look at other countries doing. The United States, we're going to be funding the government for a week, 10 days at a time, not so good. The bottom line then is this. House Republicans face the same issue they faced yesterday and the day before and the day before and the day before. Let the Senate's clean PR pass. I'm sorry. The Senate's clean PR. Oh, there we go again. I got it. Let a clean CR pass. And they'll do it with bipartisan support. Or there's going to be a shutdown of the government caused by them, the Republicans. Really, without being too dramatic about this, the fate of the country depends on the House being able to vote. The House. All members of the House representatives. I hope that John Boehner makes a responsible decision, one that's good for the country. Job protection time is over with. It's time to start protecting the American people. Senator Durbin.
Well, I can see why they're upset. I mean, did you hear all the spittle flying and the obscenities and the vulgarities? Goodness me. I think I'd call for a duel or slap somebody with a glove if I was a damn Republican. I mean, he didn't even call John Boehner Speaker Boehner. He didn't even call him that Merlot, that screw top wine swilling jackass. That would be called for. But there was, and I'm looking for it here right now. I saw something, it was last night, I think. It was kind of fascinating and sort of confirming. There it is. Yeah, this comes from Americans Against the Tea Party. And I'm operating on the assumption that this is probably real. Apparently, Ginger Gibson is a reporter for Politico. Not exactly a heavyweight in the reporting business in Washington, D.C. I don't mean Ginger Gibson, I mean Politico. But Politico had her stationed in the rotunda of the Capitol last night. But she did notice something. And she tweeted about it. She tweeted, Ginger Gibson did, "I'm not over-exaggerating when I say I can smell the booze wafting from members as they walk off the floor." She did not, of course, mention which members she smelled the booze wafting off of, but it was a nighttime vote, and the Republicans did what the Republicans did, those God-fearing, upstanding Christians screwed America while they were good and liquored up. Now, understand, Ginger Gibson couldn't name names, because if she did name names, that would pose a threat to her access. And it's all about access if you're part of the for-profit media in Washington, D.C. But, yeah, the for-profit media were good and liquored up when they went in to F America. Oh, thanks, Sergi. Sergi just looked up Rodney Duve. He was charged with murder. Believe it or not, murder charges in Texas can theoretically carry a PR, personal recognizance, bail. Basically, someone charged with murder can be released having only signed a paper promising to go to their court date. In addition, and this has happened before, you can be sentenced to as low as deferred adjudication probation for a murder charge in Texas. For those who aren't familiar with that term, it means you complete the term of probation without screwing up, the case gets dismissed, and you only have a water stain on your record as opposed to a brown stain. Signed, Sergi, some low-level thieves get higher bails, Kyle. A big ha-ha from Jack. Ha! Harry Reid said banana Republican. Sweet! Oh, they're upset. They're very upset. The banana Republicans. So therein lies the close of the... Well, it's not really the close. It's just time to take a break from the filibuster. Goodness me. And there's so much more. So much more. I got a Rand Paul clip here. Maybe you've already heard it. I got a Rand Paul clip here that will just make you scream. Apparently, you do not even have to have a functioning understanding of how government works. Any government, anywhere. All you got to do is have a pulse and a lot of teabagger, birther, deather, booger-eater money, and you too can be a member of the United States Senate. Oh, man, this guy's dumb. I mean, this guy, really, Rand Paul is Sarah Palin stupid. He's 1L Michelle Bachmann dim. And we got that. But I've got something also that I think that you... Oh, wait a minute. Wait. I got some... a favor to ask of you as well. And I got this really, really neat email last night from Jay. And I want to share that with you. Because it's a nice little respite from some of the stuff we face on More In Monday. News Ninja Gene says, government shutdown question. Bob, I expect the shutdown to happen, but do you think the Dems will cave in 2 weeks when the debt ceiling comes up? By the way, thanks, Redorks. At the very least, the exchange of the dollar for the dollar will be crap. I'll be lucky if I get £388 Social Security disability this month. Oh, brother. This much can be said. So far, they're not caving. But so far is a loaded phrase. Pressure has to be kept up on them, because the Democrats could proactively surrender at any moment. The only thing is, it's all about the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act. And can I say, just for a moment here, can we please, I mean, I try really hard not to say Obamacare. I try to say the Affordable Care Act, because that's what it is. Can we please stop referring to the Affordable Care Act as Obamacare? I mean, I know that there are problems, but the problems with the bill are not nearly as much as the baggers and the birthers and the deathers and the tenthers and the booger eaters have made it out to be. The vast majority of people purchasing on the exchanges are going to purchase more cheaply than if they were out in the merciless open market, if they could then buy it at all. And it really is a big damn deal, the Medicaid expansion. And I still maintain that that's why they're really after it. But the funny thing is, remember this, please, the Repiglicans can't do a damn thing about the vast majority of what's already in the Affordable Care Act. It isn't subject to their little funding hissies. It just isn't. So this is all, well, it is hostage taking. And you and me, we, the people, out there slathering ourselves in sweat, carrying the 1% on our backs, we're the ones out there trying to make that more perfect union, and we're the ones being held hostage. Before we go to break, I want to offer my sincere thanks to Gordon and Linda, and just a little bit ago, Sal. Between the three of them, thank you, all three of you, very, very much. We have raised $80 this evening. You know, we try to keep $150 an evening is what we try to keep going. So thank you very much, Linda, Gordon, and Sal. And going back to Friday, thank you very much to our buddy Jay for what was just absolutely mind-blowing. The frenzy of bill paying that I've done in the last week, trying to kick the pooch off the porch. Blow you away. Blow your mind. So thank you. Thank you all. So a little break, and then we'll come back with a couple of announcements, one announcement, a request for some sort of online fun activism help. And then we'll go to your calls. 304-658-3333 is the number on Skype. The Skype line, Bob Kincaid Horn. Jump in, please. You are more than welcome either way. This is Conversation Radio. This is The Horn, and I'm Bob Kincaid. Thank you.
soon a word of Spanish or two. You know that you cannot trust them. They know they can't trust you. Expatriated American, feeling so all alone, telling themselves the same lies that they told themselves back home. Down to the banana republics, things aren't as warm as they seem. None of the natives are buying any secondhand American dream. Late at night you will find them in the cheap hotels and bars, hustling the senoritas.
Minutes past the hour, about halfway through this Moran Monday on the Horn. Wonderful Steve Goodman song, as recorded by Mr. Jimmy Buffet. Banana Republics. Sometimes bumper music just kind of pulls itself right out of the hat. That was one of them. I said I had a request to make, and I do, and 304-658-3333 is the number if you want to involve yourself in the program and, you know, share your ideas. I had a note from the Internet's most brilliant satirist, can I say our very own Eugene Finnerman? You know, his your RDA of ironies have been a staple of the program for a very long time now. Eugene Finnerman knows more history than the entire Republic and Congress combined. You know, the real stuff, not the stuff that they make up while they're liquored up on a... Oh, dear God. On a Sunday night, no less.
Everybody who wants to vote against the Communist Pinko, the Communist Pinko, Kenyan Muslim Socialist, Anti-Colonialist, Deeply Hating White People, Obamacare. Everybody who's against it, say...
And the entire Republican Congress says,
that's what I thought. You go tell Harry Reid that we said,
Anyway, the Internet's most brilliant satirist, Eugene Finnerman, has a secret, well, it's not so secret, he's written about it fairly well from time to time. Up until that Ken guy came along and they rewrote the rules for him at Jeopardy, Eugene Finnerman was the winningest Jeopardy champion ever. You know, you win three times and you gotta go. Goodbye now. Here's your chocolate chip cookies and your money. Well, to celebrate Jeopardy's 30th anniversary in this incarnation, you know, with Alex Trebek, they're having a sort of blast from the past tournament. and there are five nominees to represent the 1980s. Eugene Finnerman is one of them. He has, if you go to FinnermanWorks.com and go to Your RDA of Irony, there is a post there, and it's F-I-N-E-R-M-A-N, Finnerman Works, W-O-R-K-S, FinnermanWorks.com. And you go to Your RDA of Irony, there's a post there called Game Show of Thrones. And in it, Eugene details exactly what he's up against in order to, because of course it's all about social media and getting people to vote and stuff like that. And that's the only way he gets on for the Blast from the Past tournament. That's what I'm calling it. The Game Show of Thrones. Five walk in, only one walks out to represent the fabulous 1980s. I would like very much for Eugene Finnerman to be that one. But he needs your help. Doesn't need your money. Just a tweet. Actually, you can vote three times a day. You can go to Jeopardy.com and click the, what are they calling it? Battle of the Decades, fan favorites. Go to Jeopardy.com and then click the Battle of the Decades thing, and you can vote from now through the 7th of October. For Eugene Finnerman. Then you can go to Facebook. And Facebook has a subpage for the Battle of the Decades. And you can vote there. And then you can send a tweet vote with the hashtag Eugene, hashtag Jeopardy. Make sure I've got that right. Yeah. Facebook.com Jeopardy, you vote there. You vote online at Jeopardy.com, and you can vote once a day by tweeting Eugene, hashtag Jeopardy vote. Eugene, hashtag, and that's E-U-G-E-N-E, hashtag Jeopardy vote. You do not have to phrase it in the form of a question. And you can help Eugene get onto the Battle of the Decades. And it's just something fun to do. And, you know, ask your other friends to do this. I mean, I sincerely doubt if anybody within the reach of my voice has another nominee in the battle of the Battle of the 1980s. Might as well go with somebody you know, at least tenuously, right? And Eugene's a lot of fun. Like I said, a brilliant wit who has provided considerable fodder over the years. By the way, Eugene is on Twitter at FinnermanWorks.com, FinnermanWorks.com. No.com, just Finnerman, at FinnermanWorks is the Twitter handle. He's also on Facebook. He's also on the interweb tubes. But what you need to know is Jeopardy.com, Facebook's Jeopardy page, and then Eugene, hashtag Jeopardy vote. You can vote three times a day, once on each platform, and you can vote every day from now until the 7th at like 7 a.m. Pacific time. Sure would be fun if we could make this happen for Eugene. Let's see if we can. Now, to the phones. Let's see what's happening here. Hey, welcome to the program.
You talking to me?
I'm talking to you.
Oh, okay. Let me get back in my taxi here.
All right.
That was a damn good movie, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. I love that movie.
Hey,
it's creepy as hell. And you're just, you know, you're expecting just awful, and then Travis Bickle turns out to be someone, well, I don't want to ruin it for those who haven't seen it.
Well, yeah, if they haven't seen it, I don't know whether, the young ones maybe haven't seen it because it hasn't got any zombies in it or any monsters or...
Now, we're being a little condescending, aren't we?
Well, I get a big kick out of the whole zombie thing because when I was a kid, that was nothing but a basic source of humor.
Yeah.
But that's, well, of course, and I know a little bit about the whole the whole thing, evidently, supposedly, according to scholars who know more than I do, it comes out of Haiti.
Yeah.
And it came, and that came out of overseas religion that traveled to Haiti. You know, the people that came here who didn't want to come here.
Yeah.
So, the whole thing is, well, the same thing with the voodoo thing is, from what I've been able to read, is West African in nature. Before it hit the New World, you know. And again, it was, wasn't that, that was Haiti too, wasn't it? Haiti and New Orleans, where the French-speaking, I told you, I go to a...
Well, it was the uprising in Haiti that made it impossible for Napoleon to defend the Louisiana Purchase, which suddenly made it, it sort of a property on the market,
yeah.
which the new president, Thomas Jefferson, bought at 3 cents an acre, with absolutely no authority to do so whatsoever under the Constitution.
Yep. There's the beginning of the presidential powers, huh?
Sure. All and every bit. Thomas Jefferson had the stunning ability to talk out of both sides of his mouth at the same time. All of those ramblings about limited government and the power of the people, and he gets to be president, and well, doesn't say I can't. So, you know, hello, Louisiana Purchase. Hello, Manifest Destiny.
Well,
hello, Genocide of the Plains Indians.
Ah, I was going to say, at least with the purchase, some money exchanged hands there. He didn't just go in and grab it, which is...
Right, but it exchanged hands with somebody else who didn't own it either.
And by the way, thanks for the Robert Ruark story, the book I was looking for the title of. I must have read that in 60-something. The uprising in uprising in let's put it this way, the revolutionary rising in Africa, and I believe it was Kenya itself that was one of the first places that said we've had enough of your colonial crap, you know, and we're checking out. Yeah, that's a long time ago. I can't remember everything, Bob. My problem is I don't know what I had for lunch anymore yesterday. That's what scares me. But
maybe that's just because lunch wasn't that good.
Believe me. Today I ordered a sandwich, a gyro sandwich from a Greek owned.
Oh, yummy!
Yeah.
Man, I love the tzatziki. You know, the cucumber yogurt sauce.
Yep.
Drink that stuff.
Yeah, well, we discovered, my first wife and I discovered a place in Playhouse Square in Cleveland where, first place where I had the saganaki and the other dishes they were serving, which said, hey, that's pretty darn good stuff. Yeah.
You ever go to an Indian restaurant?
You know, I should have. My daughter took me to one once, and I can't remember what I ate. It wasn't bad, that's for sure.
There is a, there's a beverage they sell there. That you might enjoy. It's always gone by the name of a mango lassi, L-A-S-S-I, and it's a cool yogurt mango nectar concoction, just ice cold and absolutely refreshing.
Yeah, it's surprising for people who in their own country couldn't get enough to eat sometimes. The food that they cook is, Vietnamese I've been to a lot. And there's a Thai place within the quick walking distance of where I live, which is, that's another.
Oh, I get real excited about Thai food. And I'll tell you a funny little story, sort of one of those last thing you would expect. So... I mean, of all the Asian cuisines, Thai and Vietnamese are my absolute favorites.
Good stuff.
Followed by a close third, you know, with sushi and Japanese cooking.
No, Japanese I'm not real hip to.
Oh, I am. But anyway.
I've been to one or two places, and it was good.
So, lo and behold, there's no, I don't know of any Thai joints in West Virginia, and... I was driving out the road the other day, just about 3 miles from here, near one of the whitewater rafting companies, and there's a Thai restaurant in the middle of nowhere. I mean, the middle of nowhere, except for the fact that it's a couple of hundred yards from the rafting company, and maybe folks will come down there. And walked in, and it was like $6 for a platter of everything on the steam table. And it was noodles and green chicken curry over jasmine rice and some little pork dumplings and spring rolls, and wow. Oh, and $6? Yeah.
And the stuff I've had, I used to be able to walk over and bring it back to the apartment here. And but I've been on a, I found a place to deliver those Euro sandwiches, and look out, I'm going to gain weight again quick here if I don't watch myself. That's just too good. But anyway, it's easy to eat, too.
Oh, yes.
But the stuff you're talking about tonight with this Congress, Bob, this is unreal. And this is, you again, I'll go back and give you that quick history lesson there. What we saw going on, and somebody beat the hell out of, was it a senator from New England or a congressman?
Yeah, that was Charles Sumner of Massachusetts.
Had the crap kicked out of him by some southern congressman.
Yeah, come on, South Carolinian.
Yeah, he came over with a walking stick or something and beat the man with it.
Yeah, nearly murdered him.
Mm-hmm. This is how that. I hope to God I never see this country at that point again. But it bothers the hell out of me. You know what the fellows who gave their lives in World War II and won and for democracy and freedom and look at what we got going now is a bunch of. They're trying to play games with Congress is what they're doing. This was done before, though. It's not the first time.
No, but I don't think it's ever reached, short of, you know, around 1859, I don't think we've ever reached this level of dysfunction before.
No. Well, one of my friends was griping about the health. He got a call. This guy gets oxygen. And they're putting. He says that the company told him they're putting a limit on how much they give him. And I don't know what the truth is about this stuff because you hear so much crap. This crap, this pure bull, and you try to figure out. Well, I'm as I say, I'm not real happy tonight because a buddy of mine came yesterday. We went through a closet and I found out all the stuff that was stolen from me was enough to make your man. They got my. A device that was great for shining shoes that I used to have. It's gone. But my drill, and, things you... People say, what do you need that for in an apartment? I said, you never know. With any kind of tool. It's like, And this... I don't know how they run it down in West, by God, the home health aides. You know, these guys set up these two-bit companies.
Oh, sure. Yeah. It's the same.
Yeah, it's the same thing. This... and you pay taxes on what we're giving you, and that whole independent contractor stuff. One of the biggest schools up here did it and got rid of all of their lifetime janitorial, cleaning, painting, whatever they could get rid of. You know, people they were paying union wages to.
Right.
And get these other guys in, and like at one of the big schools here, a buddy of mine was a painter there, and painters are still there, the old guys, but... the veterans, but what they did to the cleaning people was bring in these contractors who brought in a bunch of people, and geez, computers were walking out the door and
growing legs.
Because I don't care who you got to hire honest people to make something work. You've got to do that. You can't just just hire anybody because some people will steal if they get a chance. So what are you going to do? I mean, but the people who were there every week for 20, 30 years, at least you knew who the hell they were. These contractors, they'll put, what the hell, they're not paying anybody anything, so they'll give somebody a chance, and until somebody complains, nobody ever says anything, It's the old story. Yeah, but this congressional stuff has got me to a point, I don't know. What's your opinion of the health? My opinion is that he gave too much power to the insurance companies.
First of all, I have a real issue with using the pronoun he.
Yeah, I shouldn't say he. It's they.
I remember watching the entire process play out. We started out, we wanted universal single-payer health care.
Yeah.
Well, no, that's not going to fly. And then we said, okay, public option. And then people like Max Baucus killed the public option. And I remember even having him having public option advocates hauled out of a hearing room under arrest.
Yeah.
This was and it's not surprising, really, because we must remember at all, and this is the thing that proves the Republicans to be the idiots that they are. This is a plan that was concocted by the Heritage Foundation in 1992 or 3 or 4, okay? This was the Dole plan that was offered as a counterpoint to what was then being called Hillary Care under the first Clinton administration. Okay, I mean, that's just a fact. And so it got dusted off and reintroduced because, you know, the Republicans showed a real passion for it back in the early 90s. This would work. I mean, this is what America needs for health care reform, by Jove. And the minute that it was advocated for by a black man who was also a Democrat, it became Kenyan socialism.
Yeah, these guys.
But does it give too much power? Does it give away too much to the for-profit health care insurance industry? Absolutely. But I'm a hard ass, Bill. I'd like to see the entire American health care insurance industry. I mean, that's a part. I'd like to see it collapse.
Well, when you
because you know in the UK, as I think you noted the other night.
Yep.
The NHS arose out of the ashes, literally, and rubble of the Second World War.
Yeah,
and there were a lot of beat up, banged up, hurt people that no profit sector scheme could ever care for. So, therefore, you get the NHS. And most of what passes for health care in Europe also arose out of the rubble of the Second World War.
Yeah.
All right? So, and it has proven time and again to work. I mean, you know, people say with the Canadian system, yeah, but, you know, you got to wait for stuff. Well, you have to wait for things that are not life-threatening, okay? But you know, under our for-profit system here in the United States of America, the greatest country in the world, call a doctor and see if you can get an appointment tomorrow.
Yeah, I just made a couple for down the road a piece, you know.
Right, exactly. So it's not like people don't wait for non-essential services here in the first place. They just do it on a for-profit basis. So I got nothing for the for-profit healthcare insurance industry. I think they're a bunch of damned hogs who have had their front feet in the trotters, front trotters in the trough for a long time, and have managed to wiggle back ones in there too. But the fact of the matter is, I may be an utter fool for saying this, but I'm pinning a lot of hopes on the Medicaid expansion. If we can ever get an actually functional Congress, as opposed to a bunch of dysfunctional yahoos. I mean, I remember when Newt Gingrich was just a backbench bomb thrower.
Yeah.
He could be counted on to say crazy, ridiculous, religiously insane things, and everybody said, "That Newt's crazy." And then he got to be Speaker of the House.
Yeah.
And then he shut the government down. Now we've got the same thing that's rolled. You know, everything old is new again, of course, Bill. But the point here is that, because I'm trying to get back to what you asked about, what I think about it, I think the Affordable Care Act is at least a net better, if we can't say that it's a net good.
Yeah.
Despite some of this is knee jerk on my part, and I admit it freely, Bill. Because when the right wing starts hollering, "It's going to turn us into Kenyan Muslim zombies,"
yeah.
I immediately know that there must be something right about the bill.
Yeah, when they start that crap, you automatically take a position of this is bullshit.
Right.
Yeah,
I mean, if you know, it's that scene out of Gary Cooper in Sergeant York where he says, "I'm a wanting you to tell me which way the American lines are," and the German officer says, "Yeah, that way." And Gary Cooper says, "Then we'll be marching the other way because you're a lying Hun," and starts marching his prisoners back to the American lines. Well, when the Republicans say it's going to collapse the economy, I know that the first truth is that it will not, in fact, collapse the economy. And I know it's not going to kill anybody's grandma, because I know that Republicans are liars. I know that the truth ain't in them. I know that they will make crap up. Does that pretty much reach it for you?
Yeah, you got it.
And tomorrow is October the 1st. And to the extent humanly possible, I'm going to be in the office applying for the Medicaid expansion or, you know, getting on the exchanges, whatever. I believe, you know, especially where the Medicaid expansion is concerned, I believe in that strongly enough that I will, you know, I would get out and try to help people get registered in my community.
Yeah.
Because 138% of the poverty line, it means something. And if we ever get a functional Congress back, that can go to 150, it can go to 200%. 250, 300, 300, do I hear 4? At which point, for all intents and purposes, it becomes universal single-payer health care.
Yeah. Makes a lot more sense. Yep.
But I remember when I was going to these health care conferences that were very kindly and brilliantly hosted by Families USA. I consider them good friends. I had people on the air and off-air conversations as well. People said, well, you know, they want to call it Obamacare. We're going to call it Obamacare, and we're going to be real proud to call it Obamacare. And I'm sitting there scratching my little noggin, Bill, and I'm thinking, no. I don't care if you do like the language. Never let the other side define the language that you use.
Yeah.
And so, lo and behold, there's that story from earlier this evening that if you call it Obamacare, the mouth breathers and the knuckle walkers and the people baffled by shoelaces who wear Velcro shoes because, you know, just can't handle the shoelaces. Well, if you say Obamacare, well, that's going to turn me into a Kenyan Muslim. Whereas if you say the Affordable Care Act, well, that don't sound too bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, and for those who want to learn about it, yeah, Randy reminds me, for those who want to learn about it, go to healthcare.gov.
Yeah.
I mean, don't sit around waiting for the for-profit media to tell you what's in it. Don't, and God knows, don't let you know, Bill O'Reilly, Michelle Bachman, Mark Levin, please.
Levin, I'd like to, never mind.
But was I spot on? Is that guy the Budweiser lizard or what?
Oh, what a jerk. The voice enough is to send me to the moon. You know, I can't deal with that. With his BS is enough for me. Just amazing that things are done the way they're done.
Yeah.
After a while, you begin to wonder if there's something wrong with me or is there something wrong with them.
Oh, never question yourself.
Yeah.
You know, Marty just pointed out that when you start to describe what's actually in the Affordable Care Act, the little knuckle walkers and mouth breathers, they really start liking it. They love the idea of pre-existing condition coverage, pre-existing condition denials going away. Because it's the right thing to do. They love the idea that their kids can remain on their health care plans. They love the idea that it's going to be cheaper.
Yeah.
They love all that. But then you say, I was describing Obamacare to you, and they go, well, I wouldn't trade all of that if it meant me having to turn into a Kenyan Muslim socialist.
Yeah.
I mean, I hesitate to mention this because it's personal, Bill, but I had a conversation last night with someone who is very dear to me, and for anybody who has ever sat at the Thanksgiving table and just felt this air of tension like the other shoe is about to drop. I know that. I mean, I was having a conversation with this person I love very dearly, as dear to me as anyone on the planet is. And this person referred to our socialist president.
Oh, really?
And I thought I was going to have a shit hemorrhage.
Yeah.
I mean, I said, and I couldn't help it. It was out of the barn and gone before I could even... I said, now, just stop it a minute. I am a socialist. I'm halfway to being a commie. And let me tell you, I can define who is and ain't socialist, and he ain't. Socialists don't prop up banks. Socialists don't protect Wall Street from prosecution. Socialists don't design a health care overhaul in which the vast majority of the money goes to for-profit health care companies. That ain't socialism.
Yeah.
And I was fit to be tied.
Yeah, that sure as hell ain't socialist. You're right about that. Yeah.
Not even a little bit. Not even close.
Yeah.
Not even in the same solar system with socialism. Which is more the pity, you know, because if he really was a Kenyan Muslim socialist, we'd be talking about signing up for universal single-payer health care tomorrow instead of finding out if you can qualify under the Medicaid expansion or getting your ass kicked in, getting kicked into the exchanges, which is still not socialism.
No. No. Yeah, it's ridiculous is what it is. Oh, shit, I just knocked him over on the ground. Don't worry about it, it's okay.
No worries.
Yeah,
no worries here. I hope you're okay.
Yeah, I'm fine. It's just a tape deck. It will be fine when I pick it up. Chair got caught in it as I moved the chair. I'm boring tonight because I can't stand these people. And this buddy of mine giving me this stuff about how he can't get... he can't get the oxygen that he used to get all the time. And after a while, you begin to wonder, is somebody kidding somebody or what?
Right.
With this stuff. Because it doesn't make any sense. After a certain amount of time, it's ridiculous that people think that way.
Well, it's impossible that Obamacare could have caused him to not get his oxygen because Obamacare, see, there's that word, ain't in effect. We are still here in our time zone, Bill, a rock solid 4 hours, 4 minutes, and 45 seconds from Obamacare even becoming remotely a possibility for American people.
Yeah.
You just got a note in from Jack in Shreveport. He says, "What's amazing to me, as Bill mentioned, whether what's crazy is him or them, my mind goes to how they are crazy. I just don't get how there are so many people that are willing to back up the corporations like, you know, Bill O'Reilly and the rest of the teabaggers and birchers and deathers and booger eaters are."
Yeah.
And it is kind of stunning to comprehend. But once you realize that anything that is ever said on the TV box by some wild-eyed, hair-on-fire teabagging member of the House, once you realize that they are speaking, they never say a word that they don't have millions of people behind them.
Yeah.
And it's in that moment that you recognize the dire and, in fact, devastating, if not terrifying, division that exists in this country. Because it is real. This country, okay, here's where I say it again, Bill. This country is as or more deeply divided than it was prior to the Civil War. That is why I call the time that we are living in right now the Cold Civil War.
Yeah, you got a good point. That's exactly where it's at, man. It scares me so much because, I've studied that war so much. And you begin to wonder just what happened, what is happening to these people.
Well, I mean, they haven't started the organized shooting yet. There's plenty of shooting out there, and it is backed up by people who are teabaggers, who are part of the problem. But it's much more instructive to study like 1829 to 1859 to see what has happened to this country between 1981 and 2013.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of the same political dynamics at work.
I just begin to wonder after a while, are they crazy or am I or what?
Well, you're not. You're not.
This buddy of mine telling me he couldn't get the oxygen. They're putting limits on it. I can't believe that.
Well, if anybody's putting limits on oxygen, it's somebody in the for-profit business. It might be somebody. I mean, is he a Medicare recipient or what?
Yeah. Yeah, he's retired.
Well,
he's got to be one of the.
But that could, you know, that could be because he's in some sort of managed care plan.
Yeah.
That's whoever's administering his services.
Yeah. Yeah, it could be that. Yeah, that's true too. I don't really know about what plan he's on. You know, I mean, these. I don't think most of us really know. I get crap from this agency that I deal with that gets rides for me for the doctors. It used to be you called and all you had to do was call 3 days in advance. The Republicans get control of our state house, and now it's 5 for a lot of these things when you deal through these programs. So after a while, you just begin to wonder if you're starting to go out of your freaking mind with these people. And, you know, it worries me sometimes. I feel like my memory is going to hell with a lot of stuff that never was before. But, because that does happen when you get older. But trying to remember, I knew I had read a Ruark book about one of the early revolutionary, the Mau Mau movement in the Mau Maus in Africa.
Yeah.
They were very, you know, against colonial rule. You know, made, you know. It was a real thing. And, after a while, you begin to wonder, am I losing it, or are they just that way? Are they just plain stupid, ridiculous? And as I say, you read the Civil War stuff. I'm working on a book called Decision in the West, which I've read many times before, but I had to put on tape. And it's a story of the Atlanta Campaign of 1864. And these people should have quit. They were so beaten, and they just wouldn't face up to the fact. Hood got control of that army, and he kept attacking. He kept thinking he was Bobby Lee or something, and he could attack. You know, Sherman had 3 different armies, like an army group. Thomas had one, and McPherson had the other, and he died in Atlanta, McPherson. And the third guy was McPherson, Hood, and I mean McPherson, Schofield. The guy they named the famous barracks in Hawaii after Schofield. So he was working with 90,000 men. And Joe Johnston kept retreating tactfully and trying to slow them down. So Hood got command of the Southern Army, and the first thing he does is attack and attack and attack until his army was finally, it got bled white up in outside of Tennessee, Nashville. In
yeah,
64.
Franklin.
Yeah, Franklin and Nashville, he attacked Thomas. And Thomas destroyed him.
Yeah, beat him like he owed him money.
Yeah, exactly. And I think he went north with 50,000, some guys, 55,000. And when Thomas got done with him, he got south of the Tennessee River with 23,000 left. But these people should quit. They were beaten, but the people call that courage. Well, how come when the Nazis or the Japanese hung in there like that, there wasn't courage to the American people in the 40s, was it?
No.
Yeah. It was they're crazy, they're fanatics. And that's what we've got going on down in D.C. These guys are just, this kind of stuff was pulled in some of the congressional places.
Well, I mean, look, let's get something real clear here, Bill. If you are a member of Congress, either a member of the House or the Senate, before you get to take your seat, you have to swear a certain oath, do you not?
Yeah.
And that oath involves supporting and defending the Constitution of the United States, does it not?
Yep.
Okay, so when you vote, I mean, there is a constitutional, there's a constitutional requirement that we pay our debts.
Yeah.
So when you support a government shutdown, and more particularly, when you support defaulting on debt, you are actually acting in contravention of your oath, and you are acting against the best interests of the country that you swore, whose constitution you would support and defend. I'm looking for the exact phrase. At any rate, though, treason is defined. Wait a minute. Sorry, some have to. Yeah, someday we'll have a staff. Article 3, Section 3, there it is, defines treason shall consist only in levying war against the United States or in adhering to their enemies, giving them aid and comfort. Okay?
Yeah.
I tend to see trying to force the United States government to default on its obligations as giving aid and comfort to the enemies of the United States.
Yep.
I mean, if we can define... a 16-year-old riding in the same car with his daddy as being subject to summary execution via drone hellfire missile strike, then it seems to me that somebody who would cause tremendous harm to this country by causing it to default on its debts has done at least as much or vastly more than the kid who's just sitting in the back seat of the car, the American citizen kid sitting in the back seat of the car.
Yeah.
Does that work for you?
Yep. Well, we're dealing with a whole different trick nowadays. It ain't very...
I mean, charge rotten little bastards with treason and see how quickly that whole damn teabagger camp folds like a house of cards.
Yeah. Yep. Pretty sad. I say,
well, it's even sadder that no one will.
I do not like the medical situation. And people say, well, why don't you like it? Why are you against it? I said, well, because I used to have to call 3 days, and I had to wait 3 days to get a ride to the doctor. And what it actually does, it sets up a lot of more emergency calls to the police to take people in because they can't get to a doctor if they think there's something wrong. And you want to get checked out by a guy who's dealt with me for 15 years. Hell, we had a small bus line in Cleveland that was neighborhood, and it only ran from 6 in the morning till 9 at night. And they pulled it. And now if you want to take a bus somewhere, you got to wait an hour. Hell, it was better than that in the 1950s. It's like the hell with people taking buses. Buy cars. I hear more car company commercials and more car insurance companies commercials than I've ever heard in my life. It's constant on radio. Just constant.
No doubt.
And I know England went to the national health care in, what, 46? Because the war had drained England to nothing. And they had enough sense to do that. But yet this bunch today, you know, they don't want to do that. They don't want to admit to anything. And I don't know. My doctor is a guy I met as a personal friend before he was a doctor, which is still why I go to a guy who's 30 miles away from my house. But he's part of the Cleveland Clinic, which is supposedly such a great hospital. I don't know. Your dad was there, was he not?
Yeah, I think. It was a magnificent institution when I was there, but they also have branch campuses, and I don't know how good those are.
Yeah, it's the old story. You begin to wonder after a while, am I getting conned or what? And this whole thing with the shutting the government down, are these people nuts? I don't know.
I'm not kidding, Bill, when I say that they're not nuts, they are treasonous.
Yeah.
It is treasonous because the 14th Amendment to the United States Constitution is very, very clear.
Yeah.
If you go down to Section 4 of the Constitution, it says, the validity of the public debt of the United States, authorized by law, including debts incurred for payment of pensions and bounties for services in suppressing insurrection or rebellion, because this is one of the Civil War amendments, shall not be questioned. okay, shall not be questioned. Now, there's a clause in there about the Civil War, but, you know, if the Supreme Court can look at the entire clause that says a well-regulated militia being necessary to the maintenance of a free state, comma, the right to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed, then it would seem equally valid that this was not just a Civil War statement. This was a statement about the fact that this country incurs debt in order to go on being this country. And that and that's the frightening thing about Section 4 for anybody who is in favor of defaulting. And they, you know, they've done this once already. But it says the validity of the public debt of the United States authorized by law shall not be questioned. Not may not be questioned, shall not be questioned. In other words, if you question the validity of the public debt, you have de facto violated the Constitution of the United States. I mean, that is actually, and I've never heard anybody actually, I've never heard anybody address it in this fashion, and maybe that's just because my mind is weird. But that's a prior, Section 4 of the 14th Amendment is a prior restraint on speech from the First Amendment. And prior restraints are to be viewed with an extremely jaundiced eye. Because any time you say that there are certain things you cannot say as an American citizen, a First Amendment inquiry is triggered. For instance, there are certain things you just cannot say as a matter of law about the President of the United States, the Vice President, so forth. And if you say them, you will get a visit from those humorless fuckers who talk to their wristwatches, okay? The Secret Service.
Well, see, a threat.
But that's this too. Bill, it says that no one shall question the validity of the public debt. Now, where was Section 4 of the 14th Amendment when George W. Dimwit went to Parkersburg, West Virginia, and the Bureau of the Public Debt, which should be named the Reagan-Bush Bureau of the Public Debt, by the way, and said, it's just a bunch of worthless IOUs. Well, that is questioning the validity of the public debt.
Yeah.
And according to Section 4 of the 14th Amendment, it is a de facto violation of the Constitution to say such a thing. So every time these godforsaken, motherless, soulless, repiglican, mouth breathers, knuckle walkers, birthers, deathers, tenthers, booger eaters say that, you know, shut her down, you know, just like that freak Mark Levin, I had the sound clip earlier, they are tacitly, explicitly violating the 14th, Section 4 of the 14th Amendment to the Constitution of the United States and should be dealt with accordingly.
It's treasonous. Well, you know, are you familiar with what Truman did during World War II, the committee he was chairman of, that investigated waste, fraud, and abuse?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And Truman didn't like Republicans very much, did he?
Not worth a damn.
And yet he said there were some guys on that committee that helped put men from their social class in jail for cheating the government. And Prescott Bush... What do you know about Prescott Bush?
1943, Trading with the Enemy Act, busted. That's why George H.W. Bush became the youngest cadet pilot trainee in Navy history at the time.
Yeah, how come old George W. begins to look like the best member of the family? And then he was seen hanging around in Dallas all day the 22nd of, or 21st of November.
Yeah, just kill a little time in Dallas.
And he was connected with the CIA at that time, was he not?
According to the United States government, he was.
Yep.
There's been a recent release, I think you may have sent it to me, of documentation talking about who was briefed on the killing of, from J. Edgar Hoover?
Yep.
Talking about who was briefed after the assassination, briefed George Bush of CIA?
Yeah.
Yeah, Jim just sent in an email. He says... these radical Republicans are guilty of treason in direct contravention of the oath sworn, period. Well, the thing is, you can't take somebody to task for violation of an oath, but by God, you can take them to task for violation of the Constitution itself. And that is a plainly stated violation. Section 4 of the 14th Amendment puts a prior restraint on certain speech that can be engaged in, whether it's in, and I would argue whether it's engaged in inside the body of the Congress or outside the body of the Congress. And it says, thou shalt not, thou may not say these things. And they're saying them, and there's no damn repercussions. And I'll argue, Bill, that there's a parallel with 150 years ago, because we didn't do anything about the treason then either.
Yeah.
And treason unpunished is treason that is nurtured to grow again.
Yeah. And, you know, I have arguments with friends of mine on the left that I felt I understood the Korean War, because you have to go back to all the criticisms of the League of Nations for doing nothing when Stalin invaded Finland, or when the Japanese went into Manchuria, into China, and the League did nothing just to try to stop anything like that. And they were criticized for it, you know. And to me, the United Nations is not worth much, but it's a try, at least, you know, to do something. But as I say, I'm just I'm so ticked off with a lot of things. I mean, with my own getting to a doctor when I feel I need one, and the bus services that in the city of Cleveland is a disgrace compared to go to Toronto and tell me how good the transportation system is in this town, and I'll laugh at you. Bob, I've been to Toronto at least 10 times in my life, and I think I drove one night. Yeah, I went to a Maple Leafs game. And in fact, it was the old Maple Leaf Garden, too, by God. And I still have a Detroit Red Wings hat I bought up there. But to make a long story short, I never had to drive. And I got on the streetcars the first time, and I'm talking to the motorman, and he points at a thing on the wall, and it was, we bought these from Cleveland in 1953. I said, my God, no wonder I feel like I've been on these before. Because I was as a little kid. Well, I'm a trolley buff anyway, but...
Yeah.
In fact, those things, you can go to Toronto. Trolley buffs come up and rent the damn things for the whole day and cruise all over Toronto. Because you can, you know, if you got a professional driver, he can make the switches.
Well, that's like when I went to San Francisco for the one and only time that I've been there this past January. The only thing I knew about the cable cars was that one apparently rode one to go and buy one's Rice-A-Roni, the San Francisco treat.
Yeah.
But when I actually got there and studied the history of these things,
yeah.
Oh, my God, how fascinating. How brilliant.
Well, you know, Bob, we had interurban cars running in the 20s where you could board a car in Cleveland and go to Detroit. And once you got out of the city limits, you're rocketing along at about 70 miles an hour, which in the 1920s, that was pretty good speed. What was a turnpike, you know? What was a car that would go that fast consistently without needing valves every 20,000 miles? So it's just that people in this country have become people who will sit still for anything. The electric company in Cleveland, they got buyouts. When a couple of my buddies were veteran linemen, and they had buyouts. When they got rid of them, they brought in kids who didn't know their elbow from a voltmeter. And because these old guys were really good, but they gave them buyouts to get lower wages. And one of my other good buddies is a master in the cell phone business. He went into it 35 years ago, and he was making about 75 a year. And they came along and they got rid of him and hired two guys at 25 apiece. And the boss man put the other 25 in his retirement. The middle management character. And this goes on and on and on. And there are people out there working. I mean, Bob, when I started working, I repaired knitting machines built in the early 1900s for a buck an hour when I was still in school in 59. And, Jesus, nobody was making a buck. And we're heading in that direction again. That's what bothers me. That's the other thing I see, that the wages are, you know. And now they're going to shut the... I mean, these people are just plain nuts. That's all I can tell you. To shut the government down.
Yeah, the real woohoo. Yeah, Yeah, the kind you chase down to the net, exactly. Hey, Bill, it's been a great conversation. I appreciate it.
I'm really on top of things tonight, but I thought I'd have to say something because this is a... And I live in a building full of people here. I wonder if half of them even know that there's always a possibility they won't get their Social Security check. There's a possibility of anything, it seems, anymore.
Well, there's a possibility that gravity will stop working and we'll just fly into the sun.
That's an idea. Well, at least it's warm. Wait a minute. You got to wait till an electric company can put a price tag on it.
There you go.
Anyway, you take care.
All right, you too, Bill. Bye. Bye now. Our buddy Bill, Mr. Stress, legendary bluesman from Cleveland. 19 minutes the air, and thanks to kindly. Any further help is always appreciated as we move into October, because just because we averted a crisis doesn't mean that we don't continue to have bills to pay. So, onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, how about that Killing Jesus book?
Say what?
And how about that Killing Jesus book?
Oh, I tell you what, I'm so looking forward to not reading it.
I tried my darnest. I listened to that whole 60 minutes, and like I said last night, until the part when he said that it was a message from God that told him at 3 a.m. to write that book, I just about lost it, and I had to stop within 60 minutes. I lost a lot of respect right there.
Well, as you know, it's a very little-known fact, but you can rearrange the words in Yeshua Bar Yusuf and apply some mystic focus to it, and it comes back out Ronald Reagan.
That is kind of interesting.
Yeah, Jesus was really Ronald Reagan, and he was out there to save Palestine, middle and oppressive nation of the...
Yeah, I figure as much, and now we have close calls and crashes more often than we ever had them before, since all the good guys are all been laid off and gone years ago.
Well, did you see the story the other day about the British pilots who tend to fall asleep in the middle of flights?
That doesn't surprise me. I saw a story not too long ago where a pilot dozed off for 2 or 3 hours during the flight. The co-pilot was awake, but the main pilot dozed off completely.
Kind of makes me wonder about those little moments that I've had lately on aircraft where we just seem to fly devil may care into the middle of great big humongous clouds that are apparently full of rocks and bricks and bats and things like that. It's like, anybody up there? We should be able to get around this.
You said that the last round of flights were on a plane that dropped it like several thousand feet at a time, didn't you?
Well, I don't know how many feet, but it was a lot because... My stomach was around my tonsil scars, and my glass of apple juice had gone into free fall. So,
yeah, I've only had unpleasant experiences on puddle jumpers. It seems the bigger planes seem to handle turbulence better, but
I'm never going to get one of those out of Charleston. Well, there's an Airbus flight out of Charleston once a day, but everything else is the Canada. It's the Bombardier Canadair RJ200. It seats 50 people, assuming that the 50 people getting on the plane are roughly the same height as a Keebler Elf.
That doesn't count for me, then.
Me neither. It makes it right painful.
Yeah, it feels like a clown car sitting down in it.
Well, I'm six feet two. I have 52-inch shoulders, and I don't mean like straight across, but, you know, circumferentially. Sure. 6 feet two, size 52 suit jacket, broad-shouldered, and I weigh 230 pounds. And you put me next to another 6 foot two, 230-pound, size 52 suit jacket, and we are going to be in a position of intimacy that usually involves candlelight just to get from Charleston to Atlanta.
Yeah, I can imagine that'd be uncomfortable. I'm just 5 pounds less than you are, and otherwise pretty much match up perfectly. So, yeah, I can see where that'd be an issue on a small plane, small seats, big people.
Yeah, Keebler Airlines. there's a similar jet that's made in Brazil as this jet that's built in Canada, and I guess they're good as far as they go, but I had no idea that Brazilians and Canadians were such tiny people. I mean, I watch hockey. I watch soccer. They look to be of normal height.
Maybe they're more tolerable to less pleasurable experiences. I don't know.
I guess. Jesus. But it's awful anyway. But it's not like you're getting a hell of a lot more leg room on a 7-3, you know. I think I was more cramped on the flight from D.C. to San Francisco and back on a Boeing 737. And good God, the 777 flight from Atlanta to Paris was no better. I mean, unless you pay the extra $1,000 to get 4 more inches of leg room. No.
Yeah, I was just about to say that. Unless you pay that extra, you know, big ticket price to get a little extra space, you're not going to be much better, honestly.
See, I'm one of those nerds who thinks it would have been a really good idea to keep pressing the envelope with the SST and just make it a 3-hour flight instead of, you know, 8.
There's all sorts of things coming up. Like, I know they're talking about some sort of new maglift train they're hoping to put across the ocean, so it'll only take a few hours to get across the ocean compared to what it does now. So.
Oh, wouldn't that be a trip? See, that's one of those reasons I want a 300-year lifespan. Can you imagine a human lifespan that would go from the close of the Jefferson presidency to the very beginnings of the next century? We might actually accumulate some human wisdom at that point, Jeremy.
Yeah, I know, because it's true. But I actually called in because I heard an interesting story. People can make it what they want, but if anyone has any or information, they can appreciate to write in about it. But I guess in Florida, there was another deranged gunman this past week. Now, this story is a little different because nobody gets shot. But anyway, I guess this guy walked into McDonald's, asked the cashier for water. She went to put a water on the counter. He pulled out a pistol, aimed it at her, and then began waving wildly around the McDonald's and started demanding everybody give him all their belongings. He aimed this pistol at 5 different people, pulled the trigger, ran outside, pulled the trigger, the gun went off. Ran back inside, started firing at people again. Nothing happened.
Wait, what? Jesus.
Yeah, I know. It's a strange story because it didn't work inside the McDonald's, but once he went outside, it fired. It misfired every time he fired at someone.
That's bizarre.
It's really bizarre because he went back in after it worked outside, aimed at more people, pulled the trigger again, it didn't go off. Went back outside, pulled the trigger and shot at a car twice and missed the car twice. This story is interesting because of that, but it's also interesting because his mother had said something was wrong with him that day and had basically called the local police and said, hey, listen, do something about my son, get him some help, arrest him, do something. He called me up today and said, they're out to get me, they're going to kill me. Basically, was having a mental breakdown and heard voices in his head, like a lot of schizophrenics do.
Well, check this out. Isaac sent this story along a couple of days ago. And I've read it and just, what the? It is the story, oops, wrong button. It's a story out of Utah where, of course, you know, they're all defending freedom. They're protecting freedom with their lawful gun owners.
Wolverines.
This is the story of Melanie, spelled M-E-L-O-N-E-Y, Selenite, S-E-L-L-E-N-E-I-T. And her husband. And I see nothing on here that refers to the Onion. This is just another one of those little slice of life stories from Merca. Hell yeah. Melanie Selenite, age 55, of Centerville, Utah, pleaded guilty but mentally ill last week to charges of you got the stuff handy, right?
Yeah, I got it handy.
Okay, good. Charges of attempted criminal solicitation and possession of a dangerous weapon by a restricted person, According to the Standard Examiner newspaper, the Salt Lake City Tribune reports on what went down. Michael Selenite, her husband, pleaded guilty to illegally purchasing the weapon. This is a misprint. Okay. It's Melanie Selenite pleaded guilty to illegally purchasing the weapon that her husband used to shoot Tony Pierce on November 10th, 2011. You know, the wheels of justice grind slowly. Pierce was working in the yard outside his home at 55 North 400 West when Michael Selenite shot him once in the back. You know, just another day in America's shooting gallery, right?
Right.
Except, court documents obtained by both papers show that Melanie Selenite convinced her husband that Mr. Pierce had, and this here is a quote, this is where the tennis ball and the duct tape come in, telepathically raped her. Repeatedly. Melanie Selenite's arrest warrant said as follows. She told Mr. Selenite to go ahead and shoot Mr. Pierce. Defendant also admitted that immediately before the shooting, as Mr. Selenite stood at the door of his trailer preparing to shoot Mr. Pierce, defendant told Mr. Selenite to go for it. My God, Lady Macbeth has been reincarnated in the wilds of God-fearing, magic underwear-wearing, kolob-traveling Utah. Now, if there's a happy ending to this, it is this. The victim's injuries were not life-threatening. So I guess the whole screw your courage to the sticking place part didn't have its intended effect, because at least Macbeth got the job done. This is a story that comes from Huffington Post under their weird news segment. Melanie, M-E-L-O-N-E-Y, Selenite, guilty of getting husband to shoot neighbor for telepathically raping her. Just look that up on the Google. It'll carry you right to the Huffington Post, and you'll get to see the mugshots of Melanie and Michael Selenite. And if there's a silver lining to a story like this, it is to look at these two individuals and realize that out there on the planet, there is, in fact, somebody for everybody.
Well, I see it all the time. I know there's someone for everybody.
Telepathic rape. And I'm not one to make, you know, I take rape very, very seriously. But sometimes there are just people who, well, there was this lady we knew of years ago who had profound mental illness and would tell anybody who cared to listen that George Bush and the Pope had dropped by her house and raped her the night before, any given night before. She was deeply mentally ill.
And Dan, we're not joking about it, but it still sounds funny. I'm sorry. It sounds funny to hear it, even though it's...
No, I mean, the thing is, the Pope and George Bush, they both had rock-solid alibis. They really did.
Yeah.
One was in Rome, the other was in Washington, D.C.
Or vacation in Texas.
No, different Bush.
Oh, okay. That's better then.
Yeah, this is Pappy. Yeah, that's a tough one.
Yeah, I really don't know what to say. I know this. I told my girlfriend to get rid of the government shutdown, and she said, "Nothing's going to happen." I said, "What's going to happen? It's damn sure going to happen." That I don't see it stopping this point. They're wet dreams in the shutdown of the government in the last 3 years.
Yeah, this is not a boating accident. Okay, this is the actual intent and purpose of a group of insurgent Republicans whose sole goal is to destroy the very essence of the government of the United States and replace it with some monstrosity of their own yearnings that involve things like, federal recognition of religion, mandatory prayer in schools, you know, just get busy, pick one. Making sure the Homer sectionals can't be a getting murried up.
And I guess just for shits and giggles, some branch of the Republicans, I don't know if it was the Tea Party or who it was exactly, had drafted a new version of this this bill today and tried to get it pushed through that said that if it does go through, even House representatives and senators have to sign up for Obamacare.
Right. It's funny. What's her name? Ashley Banfield over on CNN had Marsha Blackburn, who makes Michelle Bachmann look like a freaking Nobel laureate in physics. And who was the other goober that was on there? Oh, Dana Rohrabacher. And dropped a question on him that just flabbergasted the hell out of him. I've got the audio here. Stand by. Let me see if I can get this to roll.
38 minutes on our countdown clock, which, by the way, is ticking away right underneath Congressman Rohrabacher's tie. 12 minutes and 38 minutes until a lot of people aren't going to get paid and a lot of things are going to shut down, and it could cost this country $2 billion in just muckety-muckety logistics.
Right.
So I want to ask you, you both, just a moment, you are both paid $174,000 a year. That's your salary. Would you be prepared to add some kind of a rider or an amendment onto a continuing resolution that would take you out of the essential services category and stop payment on your paychecks in order to get a continuing resolution through? Would you both, yes or no? Yes or no? Would you both be prepared to stop your paychecks?
We're waiting to see what they send back, and I hope that as you
that wasn't the question.
The countdown clock, that you're running the debt clock. I've got two grandsons. Their share of the national debt is now $53,000 each.
I asked a really specific question. I wanted a yes or no question. There are a lot of government workers that are going to stop receiving their paychecks, and there are a lot of military service members who are serving overseas who might stop being paid, and there are veterans who benefit to be affected. Would you be prepared to take a cut and lose your paycheck as well?
Let me answer your question.
It's a yes or no question.
Obviously, they didn't answer the yes or no question. Because, you know, hell no, Jeremy. They're not. That's my money. I earned that. Right?
Right. That's part of the problem, is that they're still getting paid while the people are getting screwed under the table.
There you go. And on top of the table, too, the screwings are now taking place, I might add.
True, too.
Jeremy, have yourself a good evening, my friend.
You too.
All right, later. Bye now.
Bye.
Calling from Vermont, that's our buddy Jeremy. Jack says, the replacement government the Republicans would like to build, a theocratic Somalia. Oh, God. I had a note from Greg a little bit ago talking about the question of treason relative to a willingness to violate the 14th Amendment. Greg said, under the subject line, shut her down. You're right, Bob. We have a traitor here in Talibandiana who used to say that all the time. Mr. Mike Pence is now our governor. Yeah. And then if we can just get her to shut down and bring on the zombie apocalypse, then on November 19th, Larry Klayman is going to make that Kenyan socialist Muslim, leave the office, because he ain't no Merkin. Yeah, this is a fun little piece of audio. You'll get a kick out of this. This past Saturday, a number of Republican legislators left their post in Washington, D.C. to run off and attend a CPAC convention in the greater St. Louis area. And at the conference, former National Rifle Association President David Keene was invited to speak to the assembled mouth breathers. This, then, is what he had to say.
If we stick to principle, if we remember what it is we're about and what it is we want to accomplish, and if we organize around those principles and stand for them, people will stand with us. They will make those calls. They will pound the pavement. They will demand of those who they elect to public office and whose salaries they pay through their taxes that they represent them and not some mayor from New York or some president from Chicago who's on his way to Lord knows where when he leaves office.
I don't know if you caught that, but somebody among the teabag and mouth-breathing faithful, when he says who's on his way to who knows where when he leaves office, hollered, "Hell! He's going to hell! Hell!" Wow. They're getting a little brazen now, aren't they? I mean, there's just not much in the way of wiggle room for what these traitors are really, really all about. Just like in 1859 and 1860, the treason had become pretty obvious. I said, and I intend to stick to my word here, I said that I have had audio of the great constitutional scholar, libertarian ophthalmologist, Rand Paul, trying to teach history lessons to Bob Schieffer. Bob Schieffer, in fact, I think, how many presidents has Bob Schieffer covered? Wasn't he like a cub reporter in the William Henry Harrison era? Right. Oh, jeebus. Take it away, Bob.
Is there, let me just ask you this, is there a way out of this? Democrats are not going to go along with postponing health care. You don't have the votes to override a veto. Is there a third way? Is there some way to prevent the government from having to shut down and putting 800,000 federal workers on furlough? These are people, many of whom work by the hour. They need the money. This is really going to hurt them. Is there a way to prevent that from happening?
Notice this is essentially the same question that Ashley Banfield asked of Marsha Blackburn and Dana Rohrabacher. Oddly enough, note that you're going to get a similar answer, only more ludicrously expressed, because it is, after all, Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist.
Happening. I think there is a way, and I've been saying all along that we should negotiate. See, historically, Bob, the way it worked is if the House was Republican and passed something...
Wait. Historically, how it worked, Bob. Now, Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist on history, is kind of like, Genghis Khan on nonviolence. There's just a total disconnect. So you know this is going to be good.
Thing, and the Senate was Democrat and passed something. You had a conference committee, equal number of Republicans and Democrats, and you hashed out your differences. Why don't we have a conference committee on this? You could appoint one today. They could meet tomorrow and hash out the differences.
To do what? To take the opportunity to have health care away from God knows how many millions of American citizens? That's not a negotiation. That's a court of star chamber.
That's the way it's supposed to work. Republicans and Democrats are supposed to find a middle ground, but right now, it's the president saying, my way or the highway, if I don't get everything I want, if I don't get Obamacare that Democrats passed without any Republican support, the Democrats are saying they're willing to shut down the government.
But you know...
Is that really what it is? Because this crisis hasn't come to this impasse because of Obamacare. See how the word sneaks in? The Affordable Care Act has nothing to do whatsoever with this impasse. The question is one of whether or not a continuing resolution will be passed that will avert a government shutdown. There is nothing in that issue that has a damn thing to do with the Affordable Care Act. The Affordable Care Act debate, such as it is, was inserted by the Republican Party, by the insurgents, by the traitors, by the treasonists.
But you know what? If you tell a lie, you want to tell a really big one, and you want to tell it broad and bold and a lot of times, and then it will become the truth.
Because just as I said that there is not a damned word said by any Republican on this topic that isn't supported by millions of Americans, uninformed as they are still Americans, who think that Obamacare is going to eat their mama's family Bibles.
Senator, with all due respect, it's a little more complicated than that, because you've got not just Republicans versus Democrats, you've got Republicans versus Republicans. You've got Senate Republicans versus House Republicans. You've got a Republican Senator, Ted Cruz, who's advising House Republicans to go against their own leadership in the House. So it's going to take more than a conference committee. I mean, you'd have to set up 15 or 20 committees to try to resolve all the controversies that are going on right now.
I mean, you disagree with that? Well, I didn't say it was going to be easy, but I would say that that's the way you're supposed to hash it out. The president shouldn't get, I mean, 53% of the public voted for the president, 47% or so voted for Romney in that.
And it's winner take all. Can you believe? It is. It's winner take all. 53. Look, 51% of the people voted, or more, for Al Gore. But we still got dim leader. Okay? And nobody was calling for him to only get to make decisions 49% of the time. But that is what this godforsaken libertarian dimwit is arguing. That one in our White House should only get to make 53% of the presidential decisions. And somebody needs to ask Bishop Romney about the other 47. Do tell us more, oh wise and all-seeing libertarian ophthalmologist.
The majority of the House members are elected by Republicans. Why would it not be that we defend what we support, the president defends what he supports, and that we have to find a compromise? The president's saying, no compromise, I will not touch Obamacare. But the interesting thing is, he's amended Obamacare probably 15 times already, but he does it without any legislative approval, which we think is unconstitutional. But it's
no, you believe it's unconstitutional because there are no actual intellectual faculties being used in the process. You hollering unconstitutional, Mr. Libertarian ophthalmologist, does not mean that it is. It merely displays your fundamental lack of understanding of anything that's in the Constitution. Wouldn't it be lovely if Bob Schieffer would ask him about Section 4 of the 14th Amendment? Wouldn't that just be a real knee-slapper? Yeah.
It's also showing that he's just going to fix the law on his own without any approval of Congress. We think he should come to Congress. We should negotiate how to fix or make Obamacare less bad. We are the party that's willing to compromise. They're the party that says, no way, we're not touching Obamacare.
All right. Well, Senator, I want to thank you for joining us this morning. I don't see you coming off your position right now. So let's go to a Democrat in Springfield, Illinois.
Only let's not. I mean, that was Dick Durbin. If clips like these do not clearly delineate the nature of the crisis that we face, I don't know how else to do it. Question coming in from Jan and Jerry in Nevada. Bob, does Obama have available to him, like, executive order to keep the money flowing? Well, that's what the whole 14th Amendment question is about. There are those who say that he could use, by executive order, he could use the 14th Amendment to continue to sustain the government because the 14th Amendment clearly says that the debt shall not be questioned, and that as such, you know, the whole idea of the debt ceiling and all of that only goes back to 1917, and it has to do with, you know, it started out with bond sales. But if the 14th Amendment says what it really says, then there's at least a colorable argument that if it gets to that point, he can. Understand, however, that the instant he does it, there will be, as sure as God made little green apples, impeachment that impeachment proceedings take a lot away from any executive's ability to do his job. Even when in excess of 70% of the country were telling the Republicans to shut the up about Monica Lewinsky, they still went ahead and spent in excess of $70 million of our dollars letting Ken Starr run around trying to put an LED camera down Bill Clinton's shorts. And if you think we've got gridlock now, you haven't lived until you've seen what would happen. And understand that these insurgent, they're terrorists, okay? They just are terrorists. The Rohrabachers and the Marsha Blackburns and the Michelle Bachmans and the Gohmerts and the Boners and the Cantors. They are terrorists. They are openly attacking our country. And there would be impeachment proceedings, and a bill of impeachment would sail through the House. It would fly. And there wouldn't be any 70% of Americans telling the Republicans to back them down. They would show up in their weird, poorly grammatically expressed, worse spelled millions in D.C. They're itching for this. They are tired of that Negro inhabiting their White House. Been in a friendly since the 29th. The Secret Service has fended off more threats against the life of the President of the United States since that day than any other president before, period. So, yeah, the 14th Amendment might be an option, but it is an option that President Not Sure would take, knowing full well it would, in fact, lead to his impeachment. And then what would happen in the Senate? God itself only knows. And John Roberts would put on his robe of many colors and come and sit in judgment of the whole affair. And the crap that would fall apart is hardly possible to be expressed. I want to tender thanks to Brian for the evening's total of $90. Thank you very much, Brian. It is deeply appreciated. We had a little streaming hiccup there, but it's all better now. Seems to be. Texas Betsy noting, even Romney has said that Ted Cruz is Looney Tunes on this. And they are, if think good faith partners in a desire to go on governing. But if, in fact, they are insurgents who are trying to bring down a government, there's nothing crazy about it at all. They are trying to effect a revolution. Hint. It's not a revolution of which you want to be a part. It's just not. And like I said, I did not get to it this evening. I'm going to get to it tomorrow. I want to share with you something that that our dear friend Jay sent along. It puts a lot of things in context. Just in terms of understanding where any given one of us sits as a human being in the larger parade of existence. Meanwhile, we'll wrap up with this. One of those right-wing press releases that I'm forever receiving. When I tell you that there are millions of people out there who support the various and sundry manifestations of this insanity, it's because there are organizations like the Independent Women's Voice. which is anything but independent and probably run by men. Following Senate rejecting a spending bill that would delay Obamacare for 1 year, Senator David Vitter, really, and Representative Ron DeSantis held a press conference outside at the swamp site on Capitol Hill to urge House Republicans to include no Washington exemption in the continuing resolution. Speaking alongside Senator Vitter and Representative DeSantis were Independent Women's Voice, Hadley Heath, Americans for Tax Reform's Grover Norquist, and American Commitment's Phil Kirpin. Phil Kirpin? Hey, Doc, I got a Kirpin on my ass. Can you do something about it? No. You're on the Kirpin's head. Never mind. Hadley Heath said, I'm Hadley Heath from Independent Women's Voice. We run the Obamacare Repeal Coalition, the Repeal Pledge on Obamacare, and have a petition up at. We and countless other groups and millions of Americans are deeply concerned about what will happen to our health care under the Affordable Care Act. We know it will be rife with problems, higher costs, fewer doctors. No, you don't know that. You believe that, and you're trying to convince other people to go along with your beliefs. This ain't political discourse. This is missionary work. Fewer doctors, lower innovation. Fewer doctors? Where are the doctors going to go? Are they going to go and fly off to, be doctors in Haiti or Somalia, where it's ever so much better than having to deal with that Kenyan Muslim socialist? Rife with political favoritism, as we've already seen time and again, with countless waivers and exemptions. The law makes it clear that Congress is to be treated just like any other employee who's lost their employer-based insurance and now has to go onto the exchanges and pay those costs. The proposed ruling gives special treatment to Congress that no one else receives. If Congress doesn't want to live under the law as written, they can pay the law for everyone, not just selectively for themselves. And she claims that 45 different organizations supported the letter supporting the no opt-out for Congress. And who might that be, one wonders? Well, you know it's not going to be good. And for some reason, it disappeared. Oh, no, it disappeared. Damn it. Well, they were probably AstroTurf anyway. Sour teabaggers. Right? And so we find ourselves at the close of this Moran Monday, and I told you it was going to be a busy one, and we didn't even scratch the surface. Well, we scratched the surface. When you start out with Bill O'Reilly redefining, never mind. Yeah, you're scratching. So thanks to everybody who keeps all of this going. Thank you to you for your kind contributions, your ideas, your calls, your emails, your Twitters, your tweets, your Facebook messages. Thank you. Thank you for the infinitely valuable, finite time that you spend in this community and this conversation. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you to John Fox. Thank you to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks go out to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and AICACT.org. Go to AICACT.org and help us pass the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act, H.R. 526, in the Congress of the United States. Thank you. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you. Smith is next on the Horn.